When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yo, you're listening to the Alts in Our Stars podcast. That's the name of the show. My name is Chris Payne. Today's guest on the show is Kit Moore, country rocker. I think that's a good way to describe him. Maybe rocker first, maybe rockin' country guy, because he's got a new album out. It's called Wild Ones. And yeah, it's we talk about this. It's a little more on the rock side than his first album. It's his sophomore major label album. And we talk about how that heartland rock music is really big in country now, and how, in a lot of ways, the place for big guitars, a big place for that right now, is country music. So this conversation took place last week. I spoke to Kip in the Billboard office when he was morning of a show at Terminal 5 in New York City, big show, and talked about a lot about that, of what it's like to play a venue like Terminal 5. It's like a 3,000 capacity room in the city. We talked about a lot of things here. It was my second country artist I've had on the podcast. We had Ashley Monroe a couple weeks back. And yeah, we talked a lot on that Heartland Rock tip. We talked about Bruce. We talked about Jackson Browne, Bob Seger, Thin Lizzy, Bob Dylan. A lot of his influences. And he really opened up about his past. Kip toughed it out so long throughout his 20s while his friends, his peers were getting married, having kids. There were times when that gave Kip some anxiety, but he really, really worked through things, a bunch of vocations, pursuits, whatever you want to call them, before he really landed with this steady gig in country music. He talks about how he got successful, what he actually did to make it happen, and took us through to some of the details of the Wild Ones album, which I just talked about. So I think this is a guy who really is really going hard for the fans out there. I know that's sort of something that every artist does to get to where they are. But with Kip, I think it really holds a lot of weight when he says how much the fans mean to him and how much he just, like, pours extra hours of his day. And, like, his vocals, like, so much singing throughout the day. We'll see. Let's cut to the show. I've been talking a long time. This is Kit Moore on the Alts in Our Stars podcast. Enjoy.
Girl, what's the matter with you? Can't you see it when it's standing right in front of you? So come and get it, baby.
Hey there. So, Alts in Our Stars podcast here talking with Kit Moore. How's it going?
It's good, man. Good to be in the big city.
Yeah. We were just talking about your show tonight, Terminal 5.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of hype around Terminal 5 for quite a while as far as the venue itself. I mean, I've been coming here, I guess, for four years or so, playing different shows in New York City, and we've been hearing about Terminal 5 for a while. So it's a cool thing to have worked up your headlining show toward playing there. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. We've had to earn the city's, you know, the old-fashioned way here. So, I mean, it's been a cool thing.
Yeah, and when you say you heard hype about it, what was that chatter? Was it like?
Well, the chatter was just, first of all, we played the Bowery here years ago. We played it a couple times, and we played Webster Hall, and just along the way, you know, like through my agent, through other fans saying you got to play Terminal 5 one day, you got to play there, like it's just a magical place to see a show. So tonight we get to, we get to experience that.
Yeah, one thing that's pretty neat about it is there's three levels to it.
That's what I hear.
So you're going to have probably most of the crowd on the pit, on the floor, with the stage. And there's a second level with people on the side.
What are you trying to say? You're trying to say nobody's going to show up for the other two levels?
Oh, I mean, like...
Yeah. Nah, I'm playing, man. I know what you mean. I actually glanced in there this morning, so okay. I got to see like what it was all about.
So you've... Wow, this is an early morning for you. You, this, for people listening, this is like quarter after 11.
Yeah. Well, I glanced in there like around like 9:30.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, it was still morning. I mean, come on. It was still the morning.
Yeah. So you did, was it a sound check or just like a pop in the door?
It was just, I just like to pop in and just see where I'm going to be playing. Like when I wake up, that's usually the first thing that I do is I just kind of check it out and then I go about my day and do stuff like this right here.
Okay. So this is interesting, I think, for people knowing what it's like leading up to the show at night. So you're I guess you're sound checking like afternoon?
Like around 2 o'clock. I'll do this. I'll go to a radio station. I'll do some interviews there. I'll play a couple songs on air. And then I'll go do one more interview. Then I'll go do a sound check, which usually lasts about an hour with me. I like to be pretty thorough with my sound checks. And then after that, I do VIP performance. I'll play like 7 songs and meet everybody. It'll be like 150 people. Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of a steady thing throughout the day.
Do you feel like everyone goes that hard?
No. I mean, I've been out with a lot of people. A lot of people do. A lot of people, you know, do things different way. You know, for me, it's like this. You know, we had been doing our thing underground for a long time, traveling the country, you know, gaining fans the old-fashioned way. And, you know, then we had a big hit at radio, and radio has been really great to us, and it kind of popped us onto a whole new scale of a whole new crop of fans. But over the last, like, couple years until I'm to blame, we had kind of been absent from radio. And the fans during that time, you know, we kept playing so many shows, and they kept showing up, and they kept multiplying, and they kept sticking with us. And it's just kind of my way of trying to do something cool for them. It really wears on me, to be honest, like doing a VIP and meeting 150 people after, you know, doing this stuff and using your voice all day and then singing 7 songs and then singing a 2-hour set at night. Like, it really grinds on you. But I try to do something special for them, the people that have been with us and know all the underground music, and it's their chance to come in and hear just acoustic and say, hey, we want to hear this and that you never get to play. So it's just kind of an intimate moment between me and them.
Yeah, and damn, you said 2-hour set tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on this tour. I've been playing about a 2-hour set a night. You know, and I've only got the new record just came out recently, so I've only got, you know, 2 bodies of work. But you know, I'll play new stuff. I'll play stuff, you know, that I wrote years ago. I enjoy it. I mean, I've been playing the whole new record and most of the old record.
Yeah, and when you were saying how like so much of this like extra time, this effort is, you know, devoted to the fans who have been building you up this way, I'm guessing like that's especially that VIP thing before the show.
Yeah, I mean, like those are the true diehards that kind of, you know, they've been to, you know, usually when I'm doing the VIP experience, when I meet the people, there'll be half of the people that have been to 15 plus shows over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. So I just want to do what I can, as long as I can, for those people that keep coming and supporting us.
So there's specific people you remember?
Yeah, I remember the names or faces. Most of the time, just faces. You know, I say, you know, there's so many people, and it always amazes me how somebody will really give me a hard time, be like, you know, I've met you twice. Yeah, oh man, they'll give me a hard time.
You remember me?
Yeah, and it's hard sometimes because I've met 5,000 Stacys and 5,000 Tammys, and it's just like, it's just hard, man. It all starts running together. But I can remember their face. It's just sometimes it's difficult sometimes with the names.
Mm. And is this a little, like an acoustic performance?
Yeah, it's just me and a guitar, man. And it's cool, man. You get to strip the songs down to where they essentially started. And that, to me, that's like that's the test of what the song is. When you strip it down and you don't have all the bells and whistles around, you're like, what is the song? Like, how does it stand on its own? So, like, I enjoy that.
Cool. Let's drop in some music. So you were talking about the first song that broke you at radio. That was something about a truck, right?
It was.
Okay, let's drop it in right now. Somebody kiss that's gonna lead to more. And there's somebody truck in a field and a girl in a red sundress. Begging for another So we were talking about leading up to the show in New York. So you're playing Terminal 5, and you mentioned this building up of going from bigger venue to bigger venue. What was – take me through your first show in New York.
First show, as far as a headlining show, our first headlining show was at the Bowery Ballroom. And I still have that feeling of – even though this tour has been as successful as it has, I still have that feeling every time I go somewhere, like, is anybody going to show up? But back then, I really battled that. I mean, that was early on, and we had kind of gone from playing, you know, bars where there might be 150, 200 people show up to all of a sudden, you know, 800, 900, 1,000 people were showing up. So New York City has an added pressure period. There's lots of writers in the crowd. There's lots of magazine, you know, people write for different magazines, radio people, and then this the vibe of the city and the chatter that can go on after a show. And so it just had an added pressure for us. So, I mean, Bowery Ballroom will always be one of the most special nights for me musically, the way people reacted to the Up All Night record in that place. I mean, it was one of the most electric nights that I've ever had playing music.
Cool. And for reference tonight, second level on the right is where the meaty people are.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
That's where y'all be grilling me, man. Just tearing me apart, man. I didn't like the way he just shook his hips on that. He's trying to be Luke Bryan now. You know, it's going to be, yeah, y'all tear me up, man.
Luke Bryan can shake his hips. I saw him, he did his record release show I was at here. It was, let's see. Irving Plaza, but an undersell, a small place, so you can really see those hips shaking.
Yeah, he, you know what? I got swag and I got moves, but I don't know if I can shake him that hard, man.
So, what is your best move on stage?
Man, I don't have a you best don't have move. I don't have a go to, man. I mean, for the most part, I'm gonna have my guitar in my hands the whole night. There's a few times when I put it down, but. But yeah, I don't have like a go-to move. Maybe you can figure it out when it's over with. I don't know what it is in my head, off the top of my head.
Because you can have moves with a guitar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe I'm sure I have something, but I'm not. You'll just have to talk about it later on, I guess.
Well, like I said, if maybe like angle yourself more towards that right side, second level, like
right
come
side,
over
second
that
level,
side, that part of the stage, a good vantage point.
Just all where everybody's just kind of just got their arms crossed and mean mugging me. That's where I'm gonna go entertain.
And I feel like, especially Wild Ones, the second album, it's really like for the people on the floor. It's a really like rock out kind of like put your hands up thing.
I wrote it around what our life is now, and I wrote it around with that, what you just said, that concept in mind of it is a live show record. And that's everything I was shooting for in the studio, all the sounds, the melodies. I mean, it was all around playing a live show. And as successful as Up All Night was, and as far as sales go, you know, maybe Wild Ones never matches that, but as far as translating to the fans, there's a whole different level of intensity and passion for this record than there was the first record. That's what we're seeing with the connection with the crowd, is they're connecting to this record more than they did the first record.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I guess some of that is with those intimate meetings with the VIP, and others is just like looking out at a crowd.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, for us, it was just from the very first show on this tour, you know, playing the record for the first time, watching the people, the way people were reacting to Heart's Desire, and watching the way they were reacting that Was Us, which That Was Us was one of those songs on this record where, you know, people in my camp, you know, they always have my best interest, and they love the song, but there was different songs on this record was like, ah, you know, I don't know if you should be putting this on the record. You know, I don't know if you can sing about this content. It's one of those kind of songs. But that song was so personal for me, and it's just awesome to see the way the fans are. It's obvious means something to them because the way they're leaning their head back and shouting these lyrics, there's something they really gravitated to. So it's been a pretty special thing playing this record live.
Yeah, so you went ahead and put some content on the album, maybe some sounds, some lyrics that people were kind of saying, maybe you shouldn't do this.
Yeah, man, it just, you know, I think, too, it was such a, it's a departure from Up All Night. You know, there's tiny threads of it. Heart's Desire feels like it could have maybe fit on the Up All Night record, but for the most part, this record is a different sound than the first one. And when you have a success doing one thing, the way Up All Night was, a lot of times that you know, and I understand it, but people that are in your camp, you know, will be a little fearful when you're doing something that's a whole different thing. And I'm always going to be that artist that when I make the next record, it's not going to be anything like Wild Ones, and it's not going to be anything like Up All Night. I have to stretch myself, and I can't stay in one spot. Like, I have to change. So I know that's going to always be a fear. If this record is a success and the next one is, you know, got a very pure, because, you know, I have a lot of very pure country roots. I mean, I was a big fan of Webb Pierce and Haggard and those guys. And this next record is super, super, super country, like an old school country sound. People are going to be like, well, that doesn't sound like Wild Ones. Well, I'm going to always kind of stretch my legs to each record. And it'll revolve around where I'm at that particular time in my life, too. Wild Ones was symbolic for where I was at that moment in my life.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you've already been thinking about what the next album is.
I've already put three new bodies of work together. They're all complete separate bodies of work. And I don't know what I'm going to do and how I'm going to go about doing it. And I'm going to keep writing towards it, but I've created three other projects that are all completely different in sound. I just write, man. I just write what I feel, and I don't like people putting limitations on me, like I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to do that, I'm supposed to sound like this. And I just write what I feel in that moment. And Wild Ones was what I felt in the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of people don't realize when you're touring behind an album, this is music that you put together a couple years ago, and that person on stage might have just laid down a track that's so different.
Exactly, and you also change as a person. So, I mean, and I feel like with me, I feel like I'm always, you know, I'm always taking lots of trips by myself. You know, I travel different places of the world to surf, and I spend long amounts of time by myself, yeah, in thought. And I feel like I'm always figuring out more about myself by doing that. So I'm always changing. So I feel like the music's gonna always change. And I might not relate to that song on the Up All Night record the way that I did 5 or 6 years ago when I was writing it. It might mean something completely different for me now. And then a lot of times that's good, and a lot of times it's bad. A lot of times you don't connect with that song anymore. A lot of times you just wrote a song for the heck of it that didn't mean much to you then, but now it means a whole lot more.
Yeah, and also because, like, the fans, they're going to want to hear those songs, even if, like, you've maybe kind of moved on. There's probably some feeling of, like, a connection, an obligation.
Yeah, well, and also you take a song like Hey Pretty Girl. Hey Pretty Girl was solely about watching my bandmate go through, who I was so close with, go through a marriage and having a kid and how much that changed him. It was my whole perspective on watching him. But now that song means something completely different to me, because for the first time in my life, it's like my mind is open to the concept of all that. And like, I look forward now to like having a kid and settling down with that somebody that I know that really doesn't care whether this crashes or burns, and just is crazy about me for the right reasons. And so it's like, I look forward to all that. You know, I've watched my friends and stuff, and so now that song, it means a whole different thing to me.
Yeah, so it's about someone in your life now.
Well, it's not necessarily about somebody now. It's about me being more open-minded, because I was so close-minded to the thought of settling down for so long, because this was all I cared about, was making something of myself in music. And now I just, when I look at it, I'm not so standoffish with it. Now I'm more apt to be like, man, that might be kind of cool. That you know, there's I've gotten a little softer in that area as far as the thought of it, you know?
Well, yeah, because you kind of hustled your way, I'm sure, and now
very much
more stability.
Yeah, and I think as a man too, I think that sometimes that's hard for a woman to understand, is when you're really going after something, and there's something about a man feeling the need to feel stable in what they're doing, to feel like they can take care of. And for me, this was just such a burning passion to make something of myself in music that I had to put all my energy into this for so many years. And it definitely, you know, was something that, you know, caused me to push a lot of people that were very amazing people, caused me to push those people away in my life.
Yeah, because I'm wondering, I was listening to, you did an interview for Spotify, Track by Track, for the first album, and like I'm hearing about how the songs were about specific people, places. Do you think the process for the second album was a little bit different because, like, your life changed a lot? You got a lot more famous.
Yeah, I think that, first off, I hadn't experienced a whole lot. When I was writing that first record, it was all about nostalgic looking back things. It was all about how I grew up, and it was all that, you know, past loves and this and that, and this new record is exactly what you said. It's, you know, you take a track like Lipstick that's just solely based around us traveling the whole world, you know, and it's seen all the different places and faces and how that changes you. But it's a whole different take on now the how much you look forward to coming home. And I never could have written, I never would have related to that kind of song years ago. So my life has completely changed, and that this record has been very symbolic and very in the present of what my life was in that moment, where the whole first record was mainly all, you know, a looking back and in past tense, where this is a, you know, it's all about me. This is who I am, and I feel like that's more what this record is. It's more of a stamp on this is who I am, where I don't think the first one captured that as much.
Well, yeah, let's drop in some music. Let's play some Lipstick.
Just to feel your smile, girl, I wanna touch you while I kiss your lipstick. Round the bend, down low, I've been out of the cold. Itching to get my fix and kiss your lipstick.
Yeah, and we talked about the lyrics. Let's talk about the sound of the album, too, because we touched on that a little bit before about how you were taking a risk. Some people in your camp were like, I don't know, should he be doing this?
Yeah.
It sounds like the risk you think was more of a rock sound, right?
Man, it came out in my on the tape like I had it in my head. It wasn't necessarily that you're going for a more rock sound. It's just, I experimented with so many different guitar sounds on the road and then in the studio with these guys. And I'd also been listening to a lot of Motown at the time. And if you hear songs like Listen to That Was Us, listen to the bass line through that. Motown was so great at having a counter melody bass line that carried almost the whole song that was different from the melody was being sung. And I think a lot of those things sunk in with me, where if you listen to That Was Us, you listen to Heart's Desire, you listen to Come and Get It. Come and Get It's, you know, got one of my favorite bass riffs on anything I've ever done. And, you know, that was my bass player, Manny Medina, us listening to tons of Motown together. And it's like, as I'm playing that riff, you know, that's the melody he's playing on the bass. And that's solely from us diving into some of those records. And then I think it was infused with a lot of rock sounds on it. Lipstick for sure. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. You know, it's a straight rock and roll song. You know, rock and roll has been in my blood for a long time. You know, my dad raised me on guys like Bob Seger and Bruce Springsteen and John Cougar Mellencamp and those guys and Jackson Brown and then from the Temptations and then tons of Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. So it's all just kind of infused in the things that I do.
Yeah, the Motown, that's really interesting because I don't think a lot of people would think that at first.
You know, I have a lot of people coming up to me saying how much they love the bass riff and That Was Us, but that's a lot of where that stuff was. It's not that we took a bass line, but it's from us listening to so much of that that my brain was all of a sudden trained to think of all that. So when I'm writing That Was Us, I'm already singing out the bass part that I would like to be going over my melody. I'm singing all this stuff in my recorder. I'm singing all the guitar parts. I'm putting together the production in my head long before we ever even go into the studio. Mm-hmm. And so that's why this record came out way more like I heard it in my head, because I had time to live with the songs as opposed to the first record, where the first record was just figuring it all out on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were talking about your father or your parents introducing you to this music growing up. Tell me about that. Was it more rock? Was it more country?
To be honest, man, it was the beautiful thing about it was I feel like, you know, I'm lucky that my dad, in my opinion, had amazing taste in music. Jackson Browne's one of the most amazing songwriters ever to me, and so those are the people he's playing in the car for me. Bob Seger. My mom was always playing Willie Nelson, Redheaded Stranger. I mean, we would go to Mississippi to see my cousins and stuff, and it was that record just on repeat. And I just think all that stuff sunk in with me. And you can hear tons of blues in Willie Nelson. You know, there's all that stuff is infused. Ray Charles, I heard lots of Ray Charles growing up. So I just think that back then, you know, all that stuff was very specific genres, whereas now it would be a lot more open. Mm-hmm. You know, Seeger stuff will probably be getting played on country radio now, Night Moves, those kind of songs. I feel like they turn me on to Bob Dylan's probably one of my biggest musical heroes. I guess you classify him in folk, even though he went to a more of a rock and roll thing. But people know Bob Dylan as folk music. But those are the guys that I studied. I mean, I studied Bob Dylan for years, and I still study his lyrics, and I'm always trying to, I would love to even be a fraction as good as he is one day writing lyrics.
Yeah, and what you're talking about genres blurring, it's like on rock radio stations and alternative radio stations, there's a lot less guitar, and I feel like the new home for a lot of guitar-centric music is more country.
I would agree with that. I would agree with it. And, I think it's just been a gradual thing over time. I think everything will go in waves, and I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, they're, you know, everybody's going to have their opinions about so many different things, you know, and everything's always evolving. You know, if you look back at country music, when Webb Pierce and Hank Sr. and those guys were playing, and then when, you know, you fast forward so many years, and all of a sudden Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings and those guys come along with the people that were diehard Hank Sr. and Webb Pierce, they were looking at these guys going, wait a minute now, this isn't the same sound that we were doing. And then Garth comes along and those guys, and it was a whole different sound than what Waylon and them were doing. So, you know, it's always been evolving throughout the years. It's gonna relate to the people that is during that time and during that genre. During that time and era.
And you want to be one of the people who's changing things. It sounds like that's a big thing for you.
No, you know, I don't want to say that. Like, I'm not trying to change anything in the format. I'm not trying to say that, you know, one way is better than the other. I never want to say that. For me, it's just more about, I'm just trying to be true to myself with my time that I have here. And whatever that means for other people, however they take it. But I'm not going to try to be something that I'm not. I'm going to keep writing the kind of music that I feel that I need to write at that particular time and let it fall where it may.
Word, yeah. So when you're saying like the progression to Wild Ones and these three new projects you have, these changes, that's because it's like, huh, this is the music that's in my head right now. This is what has me excited.
Yeah, exactly. It's just I have to be excited about what I'm doing. I can't just do something because that's kind of what's going on, right, you know, at whatever particular time. In the last month, I've been completely dry. And so I haven't tried to force anything. I've had nothing to say. And it'll come to me again, you know, it'll come in waves. So I want to always be true to my craft and to my artistry. And I want to try to do music with the most integrity that I can. I'm not trying to change anything. I'm not trying to say that it needs to go this way or that way. I'm just I'm just trying to be true to my craft while I have the chance.
Mm. Yeah, because I'm starting to think, like, if... I think there is a way someone can sit out to try to change things and have it work out, but I think a lot of times if you're really trying for that, it just, like, doesn't work.
I don't know. My mind hadn't gone there, so, I don't know. I'm just trying to do the best with what I can while I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, so, let's see what else. It's interesting because you mentioned Bruce is a big influence. The Jersey venue that you're playing tomorrow is based at Starland Ballroom in Sayreville. Is like hardcore Bruce country.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You know, I got turned on to Bruce when I was probably, I would say, 10 or 11. I had an uncle that I thought was the coolest guy on the planet, and he was blaring the Born in the USA record in his Jeep. And I was just like, what in the world is this? And I just thought it was so, you know, he was singing it, and I was just like, you know, well, this must be cool. But it was blowing me away, the sound of Born in the USA, the passion behind the way he was singing. You know, and at the time, I just thought it was some USA chant, you know what I mean? I didn't realize.
A lot of people did.
I didn't realize the magnitude of the lyric until I got older. And honestly, I went years without listening to him, and then I rediscovered him when I was probably 24, and I was living in an absolute place that should have been condemned. It was awful, and just the desperate
gotta get out of here.
Just the desperation that I had to try to make something of myself, and I had no money, and I felt like a complete loser, and I felt that way until I was 29, pretty much 30, before anything popped. You know, you watching all your friends settle down and start having 401k, and then they're having their families, and you're starting to think, well. You know, because we're all kind of trained, you know, this world is kind of, we're all kind of this hamster wheel, and we're all trained to kind of live life one way. Well, when you get out of high school, you go to college. And when you get out of college, you marry the person that you dated in college, or the person that you're serious with now. Well, this is the next step. Well, now it's time to have babies. And we're all trained that this is how we're all supposed to live. And so the minute somebody's stepping out of that and they're not doing things the same way, they're kind of looked at as the alien. And I felt like the alien. And here I am, 29, and I'm living in a garage apartment. I got nothing to show for my last 7, 8, 9 years of any work, you know, as far as like, what somebody's going to look for when I walk into a place. I've worked nothing but odd jobs and written songs all days and worked night jobs here and there. And that stuff starts coming into your head. I fell many times. I went in these deep depressions where I had to really battle my way out of it. I don't even know where I was going with this, but I know that those are the times that made me, and those are the times I remember where we were going with this was that's when I related to the Bruce records for the first time in my life, was the desperation behind those records, the Bob Dylan lyrics, all those songs all of a sudden were so captivating for me now that I'd lived life and I'd you know lived life on my own terms and you know in those conditions where it was. I had such a burning desire to make something of myself and to prove anybody wrong that was thinking that I was crazy for trying this, and to prove it to myself, you know, for the sacrifices that I'd made, because I'd sacrificed a lot in my life to do that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you were just saying a few minutes ago how there were people you pushed away because you didn't 100%
during those years. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking now, like, even, like Bruce came out of, like, a dark, depressive period right before he did Born in the USA, mm-hmm. when he did, like, Nebraska, where he went through this period where he was, like, I'm, like, famous and I'm a rock star, but, like, really, what does it all mean? Like, this existential doubt that he fought through there.
And, I feel like, I at times face that now. I mean, I was watching the documentary the other day on Thin Lizzy. And the lead singer on that, and I was sitting on my bus, and it was this guy that had worked so long to try to create something, and he was the writer behind the songs for the band, and he was the guy, and they finally, after years and years of struggle, they finally get a couple hits, and they start to taste that success, and it's finally starting to seem like it was all worth it. And then all of a sudden, they can't get anything to hit at radio again, and they can't get anything to really happen. And then the crowds start kind of slowly getting smaller and smaller. And I And I'm watching this documentary, and I'm listening to them talk about how they watched this guy go in this depressive state, and because he carried the weight on, you know, he felt the responsibility for the whole, for the livelihood of everybody. And I felt that for so long, you know, when I had two or three records stall at radio, and you're kind of watching that, and you're kind of all these people that have sacrificed to go along with you for the ride. And I started feeling the weight of the world, of all the people in my camp that have believed in me and have worked with me. And I start taking on all that burden, and I can feel just slipping into this dark place and closing everybody out, and you get angry, and you know, so I remember watching this documentary. This was 2 weeks ago, and it was as he was on his deathbed, as you know, because of drugs and his liver shutting down. And I found myself weeping watching this thing, because I could relate so much to that guy in that moment. And I felt my heart broke for him, because they all talked about, you know, what a soft-hearted guy he was and what a good guy he was, but he never could let go that it's not his fault that things are crumbling. Like, you know, that was, and I have a hard time with that. When things aren't going good, I feel the need to try to fix everything. And so I have a hard time letting go and realizing it's just the way life is. And it's just let go and let it happen.
Yeah. It sounds like in his mind, unless the trajectory just kept going up.
Yes.
Once it started to dip the other way.
He felt he was letting everybody down, and he was the cause of it, and he couldn't write the same hits. And, you know, somebody's like, write something about a truck again. I'm like, well, fuck, I wrote that song already. Like, I don't have that song in my bag anymore, you know, and I'm that's not where my head is now. You know what I mean? So, but, you know, I will say that the beauty during this time, my saving grace, and I've always been a spiritual guy, and I've always prayed, and that's been what's kept me out of these places for too long. But another thing has been, I've been so fearful of losing the fans and them getting tired of coming to the shows, and we're playing the same set, you know, before the Wild One record came out. And, I'm so grateful for that. Was what kept me going, is walking out on stage and seeing their faces, and they're there again, and they're there singing the songs again. I care so much about what I do, and I care about so much what I write. And I never got into this career for the bullshit. I never got in for the fame and the sex and the drugs and the like. I got into it for the purity of, I love writing music. I love it, and I love performing it. And so them kind of holding me up during this time has been a pretty powerful thing for me.
Yeah, and also I think a good way to stay in a positive frame of mind, instead of thinking about, oh shit, am I losing fans, like the opportunity to just like get new fans and just expand things.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that. But in that same sense, you know, a lot of these venues were being filled up by fans that have seen my show for the 15th time, 75% of the people in there. So there was a small percentage that were the new fans, because there wasn't really anything new for them to hear. You know, it was, you get a couple new fans, word of mouth, you know, this and that, I was always, you know, fearful of, okay, well, do they want to hear these songs again? And so I try to play some new songs, and then, you know, you're afraid if you're just playing all new songs, you're gonna be losing the crowd. They're just all kind of demons that go on throughout your head, and you're constantly fighting that battle of, you know, trying to get all that out.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just doing your job and just doing what you love to do.
Yeah. I mean, through it all, like what we're talking about here, it seems like what I'm pulling out is, if you treat this life or this career as like this thing you have to just treasure and like grip and hold on to, that's just going to be a nonstop problem. You just have to live.
Yeah. I've actually, in the last, I've just now started learning how to do that. I've actually been having some of the best times of my life on this tour, just playing music, and I'm starting to let go and just kind of enjoy the ride for however long it is.
Yeah, and so, well, you just announced new dates for January.
This might be my last interview with you ever. Who knows?
Might not make it till January when you...
I know.
So by the time people hear this podcast, it'll be in between legs of your tour. So I feel like you're going to do a lot of recharging in the holidays.
I will. I've got one of my good buddies, Pete, in here, who's from Philly, and we're definitely going to go. He's my surfing bud, and we take a lot of surfing trips together, and we're going to get kicked down to Costa Rica and surf for a good week, and then I'll go to I usually go to Maui at some point, and I'll go out there for probably 2 weeks before the tour kicks back up, and I'll surf Honolulu Bay every day.
Have you been surfing for a long time?
I haven't been. I didn't start till I was. Until I was 21, I moved to the East Coast, and you know, and I surfed for whenever the waves would allow on the East Coast for about 3 months, and then I just bought a one-way ticket to the Big Island of Hawaii, and I lived in a pretty much a little hut out there for about 6 months, and I surfed every day there. And that was the only time in my life I actually lived where there was surf, so that was the only time I ever got to really practice. And now I go, like, I take maybe two trips a year. Where I'll get to go, but it's always like you're kind of starting back over, you know what I mean, because it's been 6, 7, 8 months since you've been, and you're like a noodle in the water. You got no strength, and it takes 4 or 5 days just to get your stamina, and then by the last day when you finally get your stamina, it's time to freaking go again. So I'm hoping, I'm looking at building a beach house on the coast, and I'm hoping that I can live in that within the next year or two, and because I love it, man. There's surfing is definitely one of the true loves of my life.
Yeah, and so this was something. You moved to Maui. Was this when you were still trying? Was this already in music?
No, I was already doing I've been doing the bar band scene in South Georgia from the time that I was, you know, 20 through 21. For 2 solid years, I was doing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. And then I moved to the East Coast to work a beach job, and that's where I got hooked on surfing. And I had no idea what I wanted to do in my life. And I was writing songs, but I didn't think that was actually a possibility. And then I moved to Hawaii, and I got really serious with my writing while I was out there. I had a little beat-up Yamaha guitar, and this buddy of mine was living in this little tiny little hut with me. I mean, it was some tight quarters. And so he would hear these songs that I was writing, and he would say, you know, these are good songs. You know, looking back, they were shitty. But, you know, he kind of gave me that little, made me think I was a little better than I was at that time. You know, like, there was a lot of holes in the writing at that time. But you know, it kind of gave me that boost, because I knew that, you know, I was camping out in these amazing valleys and just seeing the most amazing sunsets you've ever seen, and I'm surfing, and I still wasn't happy. There was a piece of me that wasn't happy. And I feel like I'm one of those people that's always like a never-ending journey for that sense of peace. You know, I feel like I'm always searching for that. And you'll have it in fleeting moments. You know, you'll find it in fleeting moments, and then you want to hold on to it, and it slips through you. But yeah, I mean, like, I realized that without doing music, I wasn't going to be happy.
Yeah. Did you, like, go to school for anything? Did you have, like, a vocation or a major, anything before music?
He's looking at me, he's like, man, this dude's weird, man.
Trying to figure all this out.
Yeah, I know. He's like looking at me like, what is this guy talking about peace and journey and like freaking, let's just get back to the music, man. What was the question?
Yeah, but before music, before that became your goal in life, did you like go to school for something?
I went to school, but I could never figure it out, man. I changed my major at least 6 times. I'll never forget walking. I wanted to be Rocky Balboa when I was a kid. Like, I mean, like when somebody asked me,
boxer.
Like, I wanted to be, like, I really did. Like, I still want to be a boxer. Okay. But I wanted to be Rocky Balboa or Rambo, one of the two. I just wanted to be Stallone, period, somehow. But, you know, that was, even when people now, I was talking about boxing in this interview the other day, and they were like, well, who do you think is the top 5 fighters of all time? I went, I said Rocky Balboa, Apollo Creed, Mr. T, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali. but anyways, that was, you know, when I remember getting to college, and I changed my major from education to psychology, which was awful. And then to something else, business. And I remember I was like, you know what? I'm going to go be an actor. I'm going to go be the next Rambo. I'm going to be the next Rocky. So I remember going into the theater building, and I remember the guy kind of checking me out, looking at me, he says, so what makes you want to be, you know, actor? I was like, well, you know, I'd like to make action movies. I want to be like, you know, the next Rambo or something, you know, whatever. And he kind of chuckled. He said, you have any idea what you're going to be doing here and majoring in theater? In my mind, it's still Rocky. That's what's in my mind. He says, take a little walk with me. And we go to the theater building. He opens the door. And I mean, it was like perfect time. And I got 2 brothers. And it was like the minute he opened the door, and I'm not knocking this, anybody that's not, I realized it wasn't for me in this moment. The minute he opened the door, I saw this person kind of leap across the stage in this leotard. And I kind of patted the guy on the back. I said, "Yeah, man, this ain't for me." And that was it. That was my stint with theater, and I was out.
That wasn't Rocky.
It wasn't Rocky, man. Rambo. It wasn't Rocky. So it was like that. You know what, man? I'm not gonna be too good at this.
What show was? You know the production that was?
I have no idea, man. But I knew in that moment that I wasn't gonna last in the theater major. You know,
was it a good jump?
It was an amazing jump. Okay. It was the most graceful leap I've ever seen, and I realized I couldn't do that. That just wasn't going to happen. It wasn't in the cards for me. All I can do is throw a right hook. I can't jump like that. So, and I don't even remember what this question was, where this went. But oh yeah. So cool. No, I didn't study music. I didn't do any of that. You know, I kind of bounced around different stuff and tried different majors here and there. But once again, man, I was never happy. I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. I wanted to coach high school basketball. So I played basketball, you know, in the college and. And that was the last thing that I did. I was like, okay, I'm gonna go do kinesiology, health, and phys ed. I'm gonna go be a basketball coach at a high school. And I still, one day, that's what I want to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Coach specifically basketball at a high school, or just basketball coaching in general?
I want to go into an inner city where I feel like, you know, the kids need more than just a basketball coach.
Okay.
Where they need a mentor And that's what I want to do. I'm actually looking at trying to volunteer soon to start doing that. But you know, it's gonna be down the line. But I mean, I look forward to doing that one day.
That sounds like a very good sort of clear your head outside of music, do positive things, completely different.
Yeah, I just, you know, I yeah, I mean, I got a lot of things that I want to do. You know, I'm trying to, you know, do these skate parks now, and I'm trying to do some positive things while I have the chance.
Yeah, I saw that on Instagram. So you're building skate parks.
I am. I'm going to the inner cities and places that really need that need those kind of things. The kids, where they need a safe place to go to. And I'm just I'm building parks, and I'm putting kids on skateboards that would have never been introduced to skating, that would have never had a nice skate park in the area. And we're going in, we're teaming up with people, and just trying to create something positive in that community.
Cool.
Keeping them out of trouble, man. I mean, yeah. I've had a lot of stories of parents coming up to me and just saying how these parks are, you know, keeping my kid from joining a gang. You know what I mean? It's pretty powerful stuff. Where the, you know, there's one kid, Reggie, that's back in Nashville. He never skated, and he's, you know, I don't know how old he is. I'm assuming he's probably 11. And watching this kid on the skateboard in the short time, it's absolutely amazing. And who knows, you know, I mean, my thing with you take a kid like that, all of a sudden he falls, he, you know, and when he talks about it, he says, "I've never loved something like this." You take a kid like that just had never had that spark, and then all of a sudden that kid might end up being a professional skateboarder one day, or it might just spark him into all of a sudden thinking positively, and that it changes his whole mindset. Where if it changes one kid, And that's the only, and it only changed one in the whole time of these parks for the next several years, and it was all worth it. So I'm just trying to do something, and that's where I'm starting.
Yeah, take them out on a vacation, on a surfing trip too. They'd like
maybe,
that.
Maybe.
Cool. Well, I'm trying to see if there's anything else I want to touch on. Actually, so you're the second country musician I've had on the podcast. The first was Ashley Monroe, and I saw on Instagram you guys are friends, right?
Ashley's a good friend, insanely talented. We did some stuff. I want to say we it was the ACMs last year. Me and her and Dirks did covered some Waylon Jennings stuff at the show. And just insane talent. Yeah, I love Ashley.
Yeah, she came through New York a couple months ago. She played Bowery.
Yeah, I'm sure it was great.
Yeah.
She's amazing live.
Yeah.
She's one of those that does not need any auto-tune. She can hit the notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, live most people aren't getting auto. Well, some are, but... So, yeah. Well, yeah, best of luck tonight. Like I said, I'll be there. Hopefully those vocals after those 7 tracks...
I'm gonna look at you, man. I just want to see you having a good time. That's all I want to see. I just want to see the industry people having a good time. Like, that's my goal tonight, is I want to see you cutting loose with a few drinks, just having a good time. If I see you with your arms folded, then I might come up there.
See, I'm conflicted if I
and
even want to be
And I still have
there.
A rocky hook, man. As I'm just letting you know right now.
Got me on my toes
right
now.
Yeah, I know.
See, I, and even before this song, I was debating because, like, the last time I was at Terminal 5 a couple weeks back, I was up there, and you can't really see that well, because even if you are right by the balcony, unless you're the first person at the balcony, you can't see anything.
Yeah, I don't know. But hopefully you can find yourself a good seat tonight, because it's going to be wild.
Yeah, wild ones.
Yeah.
Do you have a name for your fans? Like a fan?
I need one.
I mean, Wild Ones is the obvious one. Just threw it out there.
Hey, you know what? We're going to start that. Starting today.
Hashtag Wild Ones.
Yep. We're going to start it today.
That's important to have on Twitter these days, to mobilize everybody.
I appreciate that. I'm going to take it and run with it. I'm dead serious right now. That's mine. It's my idea.
You got it. So, yeah, that's the show. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Wow. I like how we just went back and forth between deep things to fun things. Very frequently, I think that's a sign of a good podcast. And we talked about the Terminal 5 show a lot. He kind of ragged on me about, yo, you're going to be up in that press deck. I want to see you move, and I want to see you having a good time. And fortunately, I mean, it was a great show that I was at last week. I had a blast there. I was absolutely moving. I was absolutely singing along. He covered The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, which, if you know me, was a big moment for me during that show. It was a good time. It was open bar, so I had a blast at that Kit Moore show. It was great. He came by, and it was because the press area was kind of mostly his fans, his VIP fan club, so I was up there with them having a great time. Kip came through after the show, gave us all high fives. It was wonderful, so a happy ending to that one. Kit Moore, check out his album, Wild Ones. And yeah, as far as the podcast goes, we, as I said before, had two previous country episodes. If you want to dig into the archives, check those out. One was Ashley Monroe. The other one was a talk I had with a couple other writers about how country music has been changing in the past year. A really interesting talk there, new developments, stuff to keep up with. So if you want to listen to those two previous podcasts, a couple ways you can do it. If you're listening to this show on the Billboard website, if you're on billboard.com right now, just go towards the bottom of the story. And there's a link to iTunes there. Just click on that. If not, just go into iTunes, the podcast section on your computer, on your phone or whatever, and search for Alt in Our Stars. You can listen to all the archived episodes in there. And also subscribe to the podcast once you're in iTunes. You can do that there too, and you absolutely should. Also, any kind of a star rating you give the show helps a lot. Comments help a lot too. If you have specific feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter, @CPainOnAPlane. That handle is also towards the bottom of the article if you're on Billboard. So yeah, just a reminder, getting towards the end of the year here, I've had a blast, absolute blast doing this podcast for you guys. I feel like I've gotten a lot better at it as the year has gone on. And so it runs every Friday around midday, noon, 1 p.m. on the Billboard website. Check back next week for our final episode of the year. Won't say what it is, but I have a bunch of guests I'm really excited about to share with you guys. So we'll have a great year-end episode next Friday. Then we're away for the holidays. Next two Fridays are Christmas Day and New Year's Day, as luck would have it. So I'm not going to be throwing out podcasts at that time. I know better. I want you guys to actually not have better things to do and sit down and listen to the podcast. So we'll be back better than ever January 8th of 2016 with a new season of the Alt in Our Stars. So till then, happy holidays. See you next week. Peace out, guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.